No, my wife doesn't have social media, so she doesn't know about the tweets.
I'm in this world and hello and welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. I think that's how Chester starts the podcast.
Chester was here. We have a guest. We're violating our no guest rule. We started the episode and then Chester literally disappeared. He must have gotten a call from somebody at work or something and he left the room and he said, wait for me. And he didn't give me time to say, no, I'm not waiting for you, Chester. We have a guest. He's waiting. He carved out 32 minutes of his incredibly precious time. I'm guessing. I don't know. He might not have a job. I don't have a job. And
it's moderately pressing.
Okay. You know, on my anniversary, no less, on my 15th anniversary, my wife is begging to hang out with me. She's saying, let's go out to dinner. Let's go on an overnight trip. And I say, no, I got to do a podcast. People are saying, wait, is it true that you asked your wife if she wants to go out for your anniversary? She's like, nah, whatever you want. And people are saying that, but it's not true.
No, there's no way. There's no way. This is the greatest gift you could be giving her right now is some time alone.
Yeah. So I have seen her for maybe 10 seconds total today. My anniversary present was that she went camping with the children last night without me. She went with her brother and his girlfriend and my four children. But I got to stay home. And I went out to a couple restaurants and I said, I'm going to buy myself food for a few days and then ate it all immediately. Today I was starving because I bought an obscene amount of food. So I never had to leave the house again and managed to finish it 12 hours before I intended to.
We call that a win.
Do you, you're married, right?
I am.
Do you do anniversary presents?
No.
Do people still do that? I don't know if people still do that.
I don't know. I mean, it seems weird. It seems weird because it's it's both of your day. Our anniversary is the 4th of July. So that's always sort of a day.
So it's America's day. Yeah.
It's America's day.
By
so we share
Sam.
It. Mm-hmm. No, so we always just go out to eat. That's our anniversary gift to each other. We go out somewhere.
Yeah, I know. That's normal. You go out. That's fine.
Yeah, but you don't need it. You don't need it. I feel like it's weird.
You're also for your anniversary going out and spending way more money than you spend on a normal night. So you're already spending something that night. That's the present. Go to a restaurant that you wouldn't go to on a normal Tuesday night.
Exactly. And you get a babysitter. You do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That,
well, I don't have to pay for a babysitter. Not to brag, but I've been married for so long. My kids are old enough to babysit themselves.
Oh, well, in America, I think you have to be 21 to.
No, you don't. That's insane.
No, I'm I don't know. I live out in the West Coast. Everyone takes it very seriously.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No. Do you understand there's babysitting classes? They kids take babysitting classes.
Maybe California 13. Should secede if that's true.
This is Washington State.
Awful. So I know, but they get all their Washington and Oregon all get all their ideas from California.
That's what it says on the tagline on our license plates.
What? We have all of our ideas from California?
Yeah. We took most of them from Cali.
Okay, so let's talk about the Bears, because we actually could have a real Bears conversation without Chester, who did 0 seconds of research. By the way, I'm just warning everyone, you may never hear this, because Chester's going to come back and have a temper tantrum that he's not on this podcast. I'm just FYI.
For the record, he said 5 minutes. He said he'll be back in 5 minutes.
And it's fine. So we haven't even talked about the Bears yet. So
no.
But he may have a freak attack and say, but hopefully he'll come back in a half hour, and we say we couldn't wait. Sorry. So I actually spoke to you. I really, to do my cores, which are now, have now moved from core eights to core tens, I reached out to a lot of our fans and you were one of them. So we've already had a little bit of a conversation about the Bears, but just give me a general overview after last year. And we've discussed a lot on this podcast about how it's very easy to replicate a great offense. Look at the Patriots and the Saints and the Packers. They've been able to do it year after year after year for a decade. But historically, replicating a great defense, and the Bears have had to do this once or twice in the last 15 years also, is very hard because you lose one or two pieces, the whole thing sometimes crumbles. So what is your status of optimism or pessimism as we enter the 2019 season for the Bears?
Oof, it's a tough one to answer because there's just so much variance with the league year over year. But in theory, you look at this Bears team and this is a really strong team.
Can I say something actually? Believe that this is the most similar team to 2018 in the NFL.
Well, Well, they built this team. When you, mm-hmm. when you think of how this team was built, this team was constructed for this specific season with a 3-year window, with last right. year being year one. Mm-hmm. But this is really the season. The idea is that Trubisky is going to be a little bit better, that they'll have this offense in place. This will be year two of their offense. This will be, you know, another year where they haven't had to pay a quarterback, so they still have a lot of their guys.
Yep.
They have a little bit more depth. So everything is sort of lining up very nicely. Last year was pretty awesome. So everyone's really optimistic about the team. I'm really optimistic about it. And as Bears fans, I know that, like, the stats say that there's a lot of that year over year defense varies quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a part of me that saw the Bears last decade under Lovie Smith where they might have had some level of variance, but it wasn't like they went from like top five to like bottom five.
No, but if you're but this was the best defense last year, right? At worst, the second best defense. And so, if it becomes the seventh best, it's still very good, but that's not then if this is the seventh best defensive team, you're probably not a playoff team.
I don't see that. I don't really agree with.
And you're not a contender. If this is the seventh best defense, you're not a title contender.
So, well, there are a lot of caveats to that. So,
because what does this team do on offense that 20 other teams? Not saying it's a bad offense, but there's nothing here that 20 other teams don't do.
Well, it's. I mean, this is a pretty deep offense when you actually look at it. The problem is Trubisky, or the solution is Trubisky. So he is the huge question mark, and that's never great when the quarterback is the huge question mark. But if you look at what they can do, their offensive line is actually very good, and it's pretty deep, which is really important for offensive linemen. When you need to be able to have decent backups at every position, and they do. And there isn't like one guy where if he goes down, their whole offensive line.
Right. There's not really a star. There's a lot of solid players. The left tackle, a lot of people don't know. Leno Jr. is good. There aren't a lot of Pro Bowl level guys. The interior, Whitehair, Daniels. Kyle Long is new here, right? And Bobby Massey.
No, Kyle Long has been around forever. He's the veteran. Kyle Long, however, a lot of people are a little bit worried. He's gotten in two fights here, in the past week. Oh, because his position, because Kyle Long is shifted around on the offensive line so much. But last year he went back to right guard, which was the original position, and he was fantastic. But he's not like their only piece on the offensive line. There's a lot of depth, and nobody's like amazing, but everyone's good, which is what you need. And then they have I think with, you know, when you think of Tariq Cohen, he's someone who's very versatile. You could do a bunch of different things with. He's going to get several, probably like 7 to 10 carries a game. And he's going to catch a lot of balls out of the backfield. David Montgomery is a guy they added who they want to do more of the Kareem Hunt role. If you think of the KC offense, he's going to catch more balls.
How does Riley Ridley look? Because you guys traded Mack, and I think you made a second trade, you didn't have a first-round pick. I don't even think you had a second-round pick.
We didn't have a first or second-round pick.
So your draft is really Riley Ridley and Montgomery.
Yes.
So then and Montgomery people know about, but I have heard nothing about Riley Ridley this offseason. How does he look?
I mean, the thing is that the Bears really believe in not playing any of their real dudes during the preseason. So everything is like this sort of this training camp hearsay.
Yeah.
And it sounds like people are into Weems into Wims a little bit more than they are into Riley Ridley.
Yeah, he's ahead of Riley Ridley on the depth chart now. So this may be a redshirt season for Riley Ridley.
That's what I think you can safely expect.
Interesting.
It's one of these things where you look at what the Bears are doing on with their drafts, and I understand the idea that you need to trade dudes to get Khalil Mack, and I'm fine with trading picks to get a guy like Khalil Mack. What I'm not fine with is David Montgomery might be very good, but they did this now 2 years in a row where they have identified a skill position offensive player last year with 2 years ago with Anthony Miller, last draft with David Montgomery. And so they trade up in the draft and sacrifice picks that they don't really have.
Yeah, it's a lot of capital. And also you drafted Cohn, so that's, you know, it's a lot of capital on running backs.
It's a lot of capital on running back, but it's also like, what are you doing trading up to get a running back when you don't have a lot of picks? Yeah. I understand that that's a guy you want, but think about how different this team would look. Now, this is the most apples to apples comparison, and this is really the saddest part and where my pessimism seeps in with this team. And it doesn't mean that they're not Super Bowl contenders. They are. But when you look at the biggest move that this team has made, and that is drafting Mitch Trubisky in with the 2 pick a couple years ago, and they traded up because they thought they were competing with Kansas City, which they were, to try to get that number 2 pick because Kansas City wanted the quarterback and the Bears wanted the quarterback.
Yeah.
They sacrificed an additional third-round pick
could
to do that.
Could have been stuck with Pat Mahomes.
We built this team. The Bears built this team the exact same way. They would have built this team the exact same way with Trubisky or Mahomes. The idea is that they could have the exact same team with Mahomes as the quarterback instead of Trubisky. They would have built this team the exact same way.
Well,
would have gotten
the good news
players.
Is you'll spend 15 – you know, Jets still talk about that way with Dan Marino from 1983. So you'll spend the next 30 years just talking about that.
Now, there was an article that came out yesterday. I know this isn't going to air today or tomorrow, but there was an article that came out in Sports Illustrated about this whole kicker scandal, basically, that's been going on with the Bears, where they've turned this into, like, an obsession.
Well, yeah, Matt Nagy has gone crazy, basically.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I think that it's all, this is my personal opinion, and this isn't necessarily a good thing. I think it's all smokescreen to sort of take some of the heat off of Trubisky, and it's worked. Because if you watch that playoff game from last year again, in the first half of that game, Trubisky was awful. And he's the reason why we lost the game. It wasn't because we missed a 43-yard field goal. We should have blown out that Eagle team.
Yeah.
They had a terrible secondary. And the only reason why Trubisky picked it up in the second half was because he got hurt and he couldn't scramble, which had been his default. So he had to actually throw to guys. And Allen Robinson was fantastic in that game. And if you look back, there were probably 3 or 4 balls that should have been picked in the first half of that game. Like, Mitch Trubisky needs to be better, and this team isn't going to win or lose based on the kicker. They're going to win or lose based on the quarterback, and they've done a really good job of hiding him this offseason and putting the blame on a kicker who isn't there, and so all Bears fans, for the most part, are freaked out about the kicker, and we really should be freaked out about the quarterback, and that's the scary thing about this year. And normally in preseason, you hear like, oh, Mitch Trubisky's looking awesome in training camp. Every report has been the defense is looking awesome in training camp, but the defense is looking awesome in the training camp at Trubisky's expense, which is not ideal.
The only thing I've seen from you know, Bears writers and stuff is that Trubisky is just having an atrocious summer.
He is. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but that's usually a time when the offense is
by the way,
than the
this
defense.
Is like the Josh Freeman story, like the great year, second year, and then like just collapsing. And it's like, oh, was that a mirage? But you know, team-based mirage.
Well, I don't think Trubisky had an amazing – I mean, I think it's – nobody really thinks he had an amazing year last year. Statistically, he had some really great games. So you take out that Tampa game where he threw for like 400 yards, 6 touchdowns, no picks.
Mm-hmm.
And that greatly impacts the season he had. There were a lot of gifts out there of him just missing wide open dudes. So the hope is that
Chester, who I think is not here right now.
No, I'm here.
Oh, he's Chester. Here. Chester thinks Trubisky's good. I know that Trubisky is bad.
I think Trubisky is good. What are you talking about? I just don't hate him the way that you do.
No,
I can acknowledge my errors when we had him like the worst quarterback last year. We were wrong.
He's not the worst quarterback. I think that a big warning sign to me, at least, was how much he scrambled last year. He's really good at scrambling, and it adds a dynamic to the offense. But there were so many times last year where he took off when he should have been moving through his progressions down the field, and he didn't do it. And so you hope that maybe another year in the offense will work for him. If you remember, he at North Carolina didn't really start playing until his junior year, he didn't really start playing right away. And that happened also in high school. So you hope, like, maybe it just takes him a long time to develop.
He is one of the more raw quarterbacks in the NFL still, even though he's in his third year. It is certainly possible, all things else being equal, that he could still be getting better.
And he should be getting better. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Allen Robinson really surprised. I should have known that he was very good. But I don't think I really appreciated how good he was.
But I didn't think he had a great year. The thing I was thinking about, like, you look on paper at the Bears receiving core, of Robinson, Gabriel, and Miller. You also have Cordell Patterson, but he's, you know, at best going to be, you know, getting sort of the
Patterson's not.
He's more of
really
a returner. But those three guys, and you're very whelmed by it, right? Gabriel, Miller, Robinson. But really, all three are like slightly above average. Robinson's obviously the best of the three. And there's a lot of teams that don't have that type of receiving core. Plus, you have a little depth. If one of them goes down, you still have two starting capable guys. Miller, to me, you need to see a lot of improvement. He was a little unimpressive last year. He caught a pretty low percentage of the balls thrown to him. Taylor Gabriel, in my opinion, is one of the more underrated players. He has to be your third receiver. He needs to be in the slot. But he's a good player.
Yeah, he's like the slot/second wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But I even said this last year when you looked at the offense that there's a lot of versatility. It's not just the wideouts, because then mm-hmm. you can't mention this team without mentioning Trey Burton as a wide receiver threat. Yep. He's a tight end, but that's a guy who's going to be catching a lot of balls.
Yeah. Yep.
Montgomery and Tariq Cohen should be both catching a lot of balls. They even have Mizell. He's like their fourth running back, but he's going to play quite a bit and also catch balls. There's a lot of diversity in the passing game. So you can't really just like lock up on Allen Robinson. I think Allen Robinson is underrated in terms of what he can do. He's had some pretty mediocre quarterback throwing in the ball over the last couple of years. And so when you think about the fact that you really can't shade over a safety to his direction, mm-hmm. he could really shine in this offense. And Trey Burton too. And Adam Shaheen is another guy who's a guy who can catch the ball on the goal line, but he's never been able to stay healthy.
Yeah.
So you can always, you know, maybe this is the year he stays healthy and he catches balls. They have really interesting options. I think something that also worried me last year was just watching them in the red zone. They found ways to score by using a lot of trick plays in the red zone because they just didn't. It seems
it's
like
not a
they
good
didn't
sign.
Trust.
That's a sign that they don't trust their quarterback at all. As a Jets fan, I've seen this for 20 years.
Yeah, and it was the right thing to do. That was a team that was competing for a Super Bowl, and you got to get the ball in the end zone, and you don't just, like, have it in Trubisky's arm. And they also had the option of just running it with Jordan Howard. So they did very interesting things. Mm-hmm. And I think the combination of all of those weapons on offense, again, just a lot of above-average guys on offense, and a really good play caller. I thought Nagy did a great job of calling play throughout the year. There were times where people were complaining that the run pass balance was out of sync, but I mean, I think that's just, you know, nitpicking at that point. I think that they did a really good job of hiding a mediocre quarterback. I think that if Trubisky is average, mm-hmm. this team, I think if he's above average, this team's winning a Super Bowl. I think if he's average.
Well, hold on. He was above average last year and they weren't winning the Super Bowl.
Was he?
I
would be hard pressed. I mean, maybe statistically, but again, there were just games where he really just torched teams or guys were just running wide open. I think the offense was above it. The offense, even according to
his best games were against the worst teams like Tampa Bay or whatever.
He torched some bad teams where guys just were just streaking wide open where any quarterback could have torched those guys. I think the big thing with Trubisky is that his floor is higher than Jay Cutler's floor and Rex Grossman's floor. So Bears fans are kind of satisfied with that. I know that's a very low bar,
yeah, that's
but that's
praise.
What we're working with.
All right.
But that matters. And then you look at the defense and they lost some dudes and they're not going to get as many turnovers than they did last year. It's hard to replicate that when you get so many turnovers. But I think Roquan Smith is going to be their second best defensive player.
Yeah, let's go to the defense for a second. So Hicks, Goldman, Nichols, Mack, Trevathan, Roquan, Leonard Floyd, Fuller, Haaklin, Dix, Eddie Jackson, and the only new guy, I believe.
Their whole lineup?
Yeah, and the only is Amukamara the only new guy on the whole defense?
No, he was there last year.
Why are these guys in capital? This doesn't make sense. This is why I got this wrong with Kyle Long, too.
UDFA
and they just re-signed him? It doesn't make sense. I'm not sure why he's in capital letters here. Anyway.
Yeah, that's
right. Amukamara was there. Oh, Screen and Screen is new. He was the Jets nickelback last year.
But that's a big difference because they had Bryce Callahan in that role and he was phenomenal.
Yes.
Like he was really good.
Best nickel corner in the league, yeah.
And nickel corners, they don't mention them. Whenever you're looking at a depth chart, you don't see nickel corners like listed as starters often.
Except this
they're,
one.
They're essentially.
Yeah, they're starters now because teams play three receivers the majority of the time. And you don't know when they're going to
Yeah. Now, I don't know how good Skrin is. I mean, Jet fans
He's
are
not
like
good. He's not good.
That's what I've heard.
I mean, he gets a lot of penalties. He gets two penalties a drive.
Well,
he'll never give up
is,
any catches, but he'll give up a lot of yards on penalties. Yeah.
Well, it's easier to not commit penalties when you got a guy like Khalil Mack going after the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just don't have as much time to throw. This team in general, this defense is like the ultimate old school, like from my Madden playing days, like my college days. This is the type of defense that I would like. A 3-4 where you get pass rush and you play tight coverage and you just sit in sort of like cover one and cover three and you just hit the quarterback and you pick the ball off. They have a lot of guys who can pick the ball off. They have a lot of guys who commit penalties. I think Clinton Dix is sort of in that category too. And replacing Amos with Taha Clinton-Dix is a big drop-off. But the hope is that that's mitigated by how good Roquan Smith gets this year.
Yeah.
I thought he got so much better as the year went on. From my point of view, he looked phenomenal. And so the hope is that he can cover a lot more of the middle of the field as the year progresses, and sort of his rise can sort of negate sort of the loss to secondary of Amos and Callahan.
And how do you feel about Pagano as your DC? Because last we saw him in Indy, he was definitely not impressing.
I mean, they don't have to do very interesting things with this defense at this point, right? Like, so I think that having a really strong defensive coordinator matters when you're building a defense. But this is a built defense. So many of these guys are returning. Think of all those starters who are returning, who played all year. There's just a lot of them. There aren't that many people who are just coming in and replacing. So a lot of it isn't going to fall on them this year. I think that next year, that might be a problem because all of these drafts where we don't have picks, it's going to catch up to them and they're not going to have the same type of depth that they do. But this year, they still have that depth and they still have a lot of those guys returning. And so, I mean, this is a good D. It's hard to screw up this defense as long as Mack is healthy.
Yeah. By the way, our core for the Bears, which Gleicher helped me with, is I had Mack 1, Trubisky 2. But realistically, if one of them had to tear their ACL tomorrow and be out for the year, I think you'd have to choose Mack, right? It's like a Sophie's choice.
Trubisky
really should be 1 and Mack should be 2. Then it's all defense. Hicks, Smith, Fuller, the Eddies, Eddie Jackson, Eddie Goldman, Charles Leno Jr., the left tackle, the receiver, Allen Robinson, and Mukamara at 10. It's a pretty strong core. Who do you like better, Eddie Goldman or Eddie Jackson? Tell us about one of them.
I mean, Eddie Jackson, it's hard to not love him. He is sort of like back about 15 years ago, we had Mike Brown in that safety spot who was always returning balls for touchdowns.
Yeah, famous pick.
Eddie Jackson has 5 touchdowns in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like the Bears always have some guy who's always, and a lot of times I feel like it's in overtime also.
That was
right. Mike Brown
was
always
back to back weeks. I was at that second one. Mm-hmm. But Eddie Jackson is better than Mike Brown ever was. I mean, he has a read on the ball that is better than any safety I've seen the Bears have. And especially when you're getting pressure, that just makes his life much better. But Eddie Goldman is very important. They just don't have the same depth of safety that they do on the defensive line, because you can throw in a Jonathan Bullard and throw in Roy Robertson Harris. You can throw in a bunch of different guys in there. Akeem Hicks is on that line. There's enough ways that you can compensate for Eddie Goldman going down in ways you can't for a playmaker like Eddie Jackson. But Eddie Jackson's just phenomenal. I think he's got to be one of the best safeties in the league at this point. And I wouldn't expect him to necessarily return 3 balls for touchdowns again, but he can play.
All right, so what's the win total for the Bears this year?
It's hard to say. I mean, like, you say, well they won 12.
The Vegas win total, not your
prediction. I think it's 9.5.
Yeah.
It's
seems a little
half,
low.
It feels low, but then you look and it's just like.
But if it was 10, everyone would be betting the under. So
this, I think a lot of people are betting the under.
I mean,
but also a lot of people are betting. Did you hear this? That the Trubisky MVP odds went from 250-1 to 50-1? Because so many people are just hitting the Trubisky.
Well, I think what happened was Mahomes last year, I think, was 80-1. And then after that, or 65, I forget what it was. Someone in our Facebook group bet on Mahomes and celebrated with some, you know, he had a fun time, I'm sure.
What do you know? We can edit this out.
No, it's a joke. It's a joke because it's the same guy who said we should go to Minnesota and have hookers and cocaine.
Okay.
I believe.
Oh, so we know what he did. What he
I'm sure.
So, on the Lake Minnetonka tour.
Yeah, so
maybe
so,
he can ask Patrick Chung where he gets his coke.
Oh yes, Patrick Chung just arrested or something. So 12-4 last year, they could slip two games and still go over.
You would think that, and then you also look at the four losses they had. They didn't really sneak out crazy wins, but somehow they snuck out miraculous losses. They had that loss to Green Bay on the opening Sunday night where they blew a 23-0 lead. They had a 20-plus point lead. They had a loss against Miami where they're up 10 points in the fourth and they lost it. They had a loss against the Giants in overtime, and they had a loss against the Patriots where they completed a Hail Mary but 1 yard short.
But that Giants game, it was kind of a miracle that they got back in it to send.
The Patriots game was also a miracle when you think about it. The Bears, but and then the Eagles game in the playoffs. I mean, those were all winnable games, but they didn't really win any of those toss-up games, and they still won 12 games. So when you look at it that way, you're like, oh, well, they could win even more. But then you look at it again and you're like, well, the Vikings will probably be better. The Packers should be better.
Lions have to be better, I think.
Do they?
I'm going to drop a hot NFC Norris take on you guys. I think all four of these teams, I mean, the top three teams are slightly overrated. The Lions are slightly underrated. And I don't love any of these teams. And the Super Bowl winner is definitely not coming from the NFC North.
I mean, there's at least an 18% chance that you're wrong. But I think that it's going to be hard for an NFC North team to get a bye. And so that makes it hard to win a Super Bowl. It's really hard to win a Super Bowl because these playoff games, you know, anybody can win these games as
well, if one of them is good, it's not hard to get a bye. I mean, the other divisions the Cardinals and the Bucks.
But if two of them are good, it is hard to get a bye.
I don't think there's a chance that two of them are going to be good this year. Like, I mean, not good, not 9-7 good. I mean, I don't think there's two double-digit win teams in this division.
But when I look at this Bears team, that's a deep team. And if Trubisky is even average, that's a team that should win 11, 12 games. And then you look at the Vikings, and there's no reason to think the Vikings aren't going to be good. If they have an average quarterback, which they do.
No, that's so, their problem is their offensive line and their lack of depth.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so that's the difference between sort of year three on this arc versus year two on this arc.
When you're paying $28 million for your quarterback, you don't have the money to sign depth. And so if anybody gets injured on your defense, you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And the Bears were lucky with injuries. Now, and they had guys miss some games. Eddie Jackson missed a playoff game. And missed the last few games of the season. Khalil Mack missed a few games. They had guys miss games, but they were never really in a position last year where they're on their third left tackle or anything like that. And that's really where you get hit. It's not necessarily when you get to the first guys get injured. It's like when those second guys get injured. And they didn't have that last year. So that's a reason to say, well, maybe they won't win 10-plus games. But at the same time, I mean, this is a strong roster, and they're pretty deep, and they don't seem like they're one injury away from their whole season just cratering in a way that most teams would be. So I think it's realistic to look at this Bears team as a Super Bowl contender, especially if the Vikings aren't good.
No, the Vikings are good. I just don't think the Vikings are a contender. Chester, problem here is we don't know exactly when we're going to buy. I think we're just going to keep talking, and at some point you're going to have to retroactively bomb us. So I think we're still like 3 minutes away or something. All right, so what else? Chester, you have anything else on the Chicago Bears?
Well, I don't want to repeat. I don't want to annoy the listeners. I don't know what happened while I was gone.
Well, just guess. And we'll ant you guess.
Did we talk about how Charles Nagy's brain has been broken by the kicker situation?
We didn't really get
Charles
into
Nagy,
it.
No, we didn't talk about any Indian pitchers from the 90s. We did talk about Matt Nagy.
Matt Nagy.
But I said that I think it's all smokescreen.
Yeah.
And that it's he's just
I don't know if that was I don't know if we were recording yet, but the Bears article was really interesting. Everyone should read it, although I guess it's old news by the time this is coming out. One of my takeaways is that Cody Park is clearly a better kicker than any of those guys. They know they just can't bring him back because if he misses another kick, then Nagy gets blamed versus before just the kicker got blamed.
But I mean, missing a 43-yarder is not the same as missing like a 27-yarder.
But he missed six under 50-yard field goals last year.
Yeah. When you doink, that's just bad luck.
Okay, he hit six uprights during the season. He had one game, he hit four uprights, two on extra points. Mm-hmm. That's where he really was in trouble.
Yeah.
Then he hit an upright the last week of the season. Then he hits two uprights at the end of the year. I mean, the other problem with here's the part about Parkey that they didn't mention in the article, which was irritating to me. So you know when they go to the sideline reporter on the last drive and they say, well, the kicker said he's good from 61. And so that means like really 57.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the kickers now in the NFL are good from like 60 plus in theory. They might not necessarily
in practice.
Hit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then during that last drive, they go to, I forget who was, it might've been like Visser. I don't know. Remember who it was. Maybe Andrew Mitchell. They're like, we talked to Cody Parker. He said he's good from 53. Are you serious? You're good from 53? That's
right.
The best you can provide?
That's not, that
so
is
it's
funny,
not
yeah.
that he missed a 43-yarder. It's that
his confidence was
if
so
you
low.
Are worried about the quarterback, you need a kicker who is at least capable of hitting a 55-yarder. That's ridiculous. And it wasn't just one kick. If he just missed this one kick, he could have come back. He was scaring people. Bears fans were terrified from the minute he started hitting the uprights against Detroit in that one game mm-hmm. when he hit the four uprights. So that already started then. And he did not really improve from that game on. And so you combine the fact that he's missing. Like, if your peak is 53, you've got to be like 100% from under 50. And he wasn't. He wasn't very good. So at that point, it sounds like they're overthinking it for sure. But at the same time, their kicker, I don't know. Everyone was like, bring back Robbie Gould. But the truth is, Robbie Gould's a guy who they found. And when they found him, it was the middle of the 2005 season, I think, and he was bartending. Like, you can find kickers who just aren't signed randomly. And I know that the Vikings just got a guy and they traded like a fifth-round pick for him.
Yeah.
It also seems so. It seems so cultish.
He's not a good kicker and he's not a good punter.
Yeah, it seems so cultish, that article. It's like kickers can't even get rated to go to college unless they pay to go to some camp because that guy's rankings are the only rankings in the country that really matter. So every kicker has to go through the camp.
What about this talk about how the